life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility, but driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
We just got back from a shoot for season 3.
Yeah, we did. It was successful.
Yeah, we had the Kia Stinger and BMW 4 Grand Coupe.
Yeah.
And I had a thought that I wanted to share about that, and it ended up being very timely because I feel like hours before we recorded this podcast, maybe minutes before we recorded this podcast, the news came out that last night there was a death as a result of an Uber, self-driving Uber in Arizona struck a woman.
Yeah, this was out in Tempe,
Arizona.
And I want
to relate the two. But yeah. So people have asked us about this article. I guess to some degree I'm glad it happened before we podcasted. But at the same time, I'm horrified it happened at all.
Yeah, agreed.
But the big point I want to make, the way I want to connect that to the Kia Stinger thing, is the big thing that I was left with on the Stinger related to autonomous cars is this. We ended up going through a massive L.A. traffic run. Of course we did. We're in L.A.
Yeah.
We ended up doing the stop-and-go thing. And I thought, you know.
Even on a weekend, which was crazy.
Yeah. Middle of a weekend day. Yeah, for sure.
It's nuts.
I set the – and this will come back to this article, I swear. I set the automatic cruise control, which a lot of cars have now. And Kia has a very good system, very good system. A couple of things struck me. First off, it has a follow distance setting you can have. You can have, you know, way far away, medium, or pretty close.
Right.
The pretty close is still not close enough for the way LA traffic works. So the car is kind of constantly freaked out. But I drove it for a while when I was actually at speed and it was fluctuating speed really well. And then I drove it in stop and go for a bit until it annoyed me so much I turned it off.
Hmm.
And the reason that it annoyed me, I think, relates directly back to this story.
Yeah, I like this. Keep going.
Here's my point.
I like this.
I think the biggest problem that we're having with these systems right now versus an actual human driver is these systems are entirely reactionary. They are not anticipatory.
Right, right.
And let me relate it right back to my situation. When I'm driving in stop-and-go traffic, which, of course, we've all done, everybody's done it, but you're not watching the car in front of you. You're watching the cars in front of you.
Right.
When somebody brakes five, six cars ahead, you see their brake lights come on. You're already off the gas.
I mean, you're looking through their back window, through their windshield at
the
cars ahead
of you. You're watching all the brake lights domino towards you until the person in front of you hits their brake lights. And let's be honest, there's another thing that happens. The person in front of you hits their brake lights. They're probably hitting their lights before they're actually hitting the brakes. You have that moment of anticipation as well.
It's your foot covering the pedal.
Exactly. That's starting to turn the lights on, finish the circuit.
Right.
And now they're braking. But a system in the Kia behind, in the Kia I'm sitting in behind, it is only sensing closing distance. So the only time it stops accelerating and goes on to the brakes, and it doesn't really do a coast either. It's just doing one or the other. The minute it transitions is because now we have closing distance. But by that point, you now have to have a pretty serious braking event, much more so than I would have were I driving.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up turning it off because I realized I was much smoother. And here's the thing. This system works as well as pretty much any system I've driven that does this. But I was much smoother. It was a much more comfortable ride for me to do it myself than to let the automatic system do it. I realized if I would sat in this every day, I'd probably just get used to it and be fine with it. But that's back to this situation. A woman steps into the street, not in a crosswalk. This system, all systems, are set up to anticipate only – no, rephrase – react to only the situations they've been programmed to. You throw in a curveball, like not in a crosswalk, ladder in the road – it can't anticipate. It can't think ahead. It goes, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I've got a lot of thoughts here, and we are horrified that this happened. Stay with me when I make this comment here. Just stay with me for a moment. Let it go by. It's very debatable and very controversial, but I have heard this. This is not my own comment. From that recent autonomous conference I went to, I heard a speaker say, you know, people killing people, humans killing other humans – it's not okay, but it's a part of the world that we live in. That happens.
We are aware that it goes on.
We are aware it goes on. Just let that go by. But then when a machine kills a human, that is flat out, full stop, not okay.
Mm-hmm.
If
absolutely.
Some technology kills a human being, no. Mm-hmm. No. Which I agree with. And again, the whole statement is very controversial and debatable for a long time. But here we have this pedestrian. She was walking her bicycle on the street outside of a crosswalk. Say, you know, we're looking, we're anticipating people, to your point, they're about to enter the crosswalk. The car is only looking within the confines of the street. And yeah. only if there is somebody starting to walk a crosswalk, not looking at that person, kind of reading their eyes, reading right. their body yeah, totally. Language, and, totally. Oh, they're about to step in the crosswalk. My foot's already covering the brake.
Yeah.
I'm already there.
Yeah.
I even looked at people's tires. This is strange, I know, but
yeah, I know where you're
think
going.
About yourself in the number one lane. You're mm-hmm. moving along. Mm-hmm. Cars are merging from the right, and they're merging from lane three into lane two.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going, all right, I'm anticipating, and I'm watching the front tires of that car. And as soon as they turn, I'm going, those wheels will turn before they even hit the turn signal.
Yeah.
And then there it is. Sure enough, I was right. They want to come in front of me.
Yep.
I knew you were coming over.
Yeah.
Autonomous cars are not working like that way
mm-hmm.
or that way yet. And I know Uber is very much operating in the Tony Stark headspace of, you've got to run before you can walk. Let's sure. get it out there.
Yeah.
But to their credit, they have canceled or stopped all of their current testing in Tempe, San Francisco, Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and Toronto. Mm-hmm. They need to sort this out, and there's a whole heck of a lot more simulation and testing that needs yeah. to be done before we're there. And I feel like this is a big setback for Uber, but for the autonomy in general. But there needs to be way more closed-course simulation and digital simulation before we can keep doing
this. It's just that these systems don't have an ability to contemplate the unexpected. Mm-hmm. And as humans, we do oddball things. We just do. We just do weird, well, I'm just going to do this right
now. And as human beings, you can kind of relate to the person about to get totally. Out of the crosswalk. Like, if that were me, I'd probably be stepping out in the crosswalk expecting the car to stop.
Mm-hmm.
So I can kind of give them the benefit of the doubt. Like, yeah, they're probably thinking the same thing like I would.
Yeah.
Start to cover the brake with your foot.
And
there you
and
go.
It's and I was very struck kind of anew with this Kia this weekend, which, you know, this is not any kind of slight against the Kia. All these systems are this way, but I was very struck while driving it, especially in the stop and go. I came to a stop at one point with my feet off the pedals. So mm-hmm. it was doing a perfectly fine job. I just was smoother, and the only reason I was smoother is because I was looking for different cues and I was anticipating, and the system is reacting.
Very much so. It's just reacting only to what it sees at that
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely.
And in some cases, it's not reacting correctly. I mean, it's still algorithms.
Yeah, it's here's the thing. In every situation, the Kia that I was driving, this system did nothing wrong. But it did nothing wrong in the same way that a person that's been driving since yesterday did a fine job today.
Mm-hmm.
But how different are they in traffic as far as smoothness is concerned than somebody who's been driving in stop and go for 20 years? Totally different thing.
This brings up the question that the trial lawyer at this conference brought up, and it was ultimately who's responsible. When they get through investigating this accident and go through the steps of here's what happened, the timeline,
yeah,
I'm sure
yeah,
they've
yeah.
got it on camera, on a dash cam.
I'm sure, yeah.
On and on and on.
Yeah.
What will they find, and who's ultimately responsible? Is it the code? Mm. Is it the coders?
Mm.
It's an excellent question, and here, unfortunately,
yeah.
we finally have an excellent example of what to go determine.
Yeah.
I'm very curious as to the outcome.
Well, and it's also, sorry, my last thought that's filtering through my head on this for right now, it's further proof of the fact that we're at stage two of the four or five stages.
Which is still pretty much cruise control on your normal car.
Yeah, it's essentially two systems are controlled, steering and your gas braking are controlled at the same time. You know, this is the step we're on because the unexpected stuff the system throws up its hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's just tragic. So, of course, more news to come on that.
Mm-hmm.
But switching gears to thanking you guys for writing questions to us.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it. We're recording a little bit earlier in the day, which is nice. And like Todd said, we just got back from a great shoot. This kicks off our season three,
mm-hmm.
which is crazy. We haven't actually shot anything really quite yet this year.
We realized we hadn't shot since December because I went underground into editing. And then, of course, it snowed here in Utah, and so we didn't have anything we could shoot locally. So it's always been travel stuff, which is not a problem at all. So we went to L.A., and we're starting seriously into Season 3, which we're very excited about.
Yeah. Season 2 is still currently on Velocity.
Yep.
Huge thanks to our sponsors. You've heard it before. Covercraft, our friends at Griot's Garage, and also Auto Tempest. If you use the code EVERYDAY with Covercraft and Griot's, you will get 10% off with Griot's Garage products.
Yes.
Free shipping with Covercraft. Keep
we've got
that in
a Griot's giveaway coming up, so stay tuned for that as well on social media. That will happen there.
Did you see the news about the BMW M2 competition possibly coming out, possibly revealing itself?
We'll see.
This guy's excited.
You know
it'll
exist.
I can tell you that.
You're gonna go ahead and put a preemptive deposit down?
No, I'm not.
That's
because
right.
they're going to tell me, oh, sorry.
Yeah, and you bought a porch. Yeah.
I did buy a porch instead.
Yeah, exactly.
It's made out of Trex and steel and
Yeah.
It has a nice view, but yeah. It doesn't go anywhere. It's not fast. And it's not that good looking in comparison. Well, guys, we've got great couple of debates here. Interesting debate from Rav in the UK. Mm-hmm. He's in East London wanting to buy a pickup truck, which will be very cool. And then after the break, we've got Clem out in Carlsbad, California. Beautiful area of the country. And he has currently driving a work truck, as a matter of fact, and looking for a couple of things, $5,000 fun car. But he's also asked us the question, how do you make your wife into a car wife?
Yeah.
Is that like a golf widow?
A car widow is possible. I never see him anymore. He has that car. That's unfortunate, but hopefully we'll cover that a little bit.
Not the case. All right. So, Rav, thanks for writing in. Really appreciate it. We will just get after it and get into your debate because he says, hi, guys. Considering you're in the birthplace of pickups, which would you recommend if you were to be in the UK?
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, he's out in East London as a car enthusiast, currently owning a 1989 E30 BMW in Calypso Red. And the soon-to-be wife, he has a Hyundai i10.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations on your upcoming nuptials. And we're really thrilled for you. But she's already a bit of a petrol head.
Yeah,
and
cool.
Wants him to
that's
keep
really cool.
The E30.
Which is awesome.
So he's happy about that. But then she wants to go from one extreme to another and replace that i10 with a pickup truck, a 4x4. Does she want to be up high? Does she want the high eye-level driving experience? Is that kind of the foundation for this change?
I wonder if it's just the, you know what, when else in life are we going to have this ridiculous vehicle? I wonder about that. You know, I wonder if it's that part of that. But
I mean,
knows?
Is that going to be towing your race car and that's going to bond you guys even more?
We're just buying a pickup. We're not buying a race car yet. There's no towing
pickups
happening
equal
yet.
Race car truck towing.
In your mind, it does. Yes, I get that. Yeah.
Some people haul stuff with it or ranching or just drive it around. I see none of that.
See, I think of that because coming from Texas, I think, you know, there are actually people here that use their trucks. There's a lot of people that don't use their trucks and just commute in their trucks for inexplicable reasons.
Yeah.
But there are those people that actually use them as well.
Agreed. All right. Well, she's always loved the idea of having one. That's why. And she's brought that dream alive. Personal favorites in the past, he says, have been the Ford F-150 and very old Broncos like the one Stone Cold Steve Austin is floating around in currently, which is pretty cool. And I 70s Broncos. Those are the cars built by Icon 4x4.
Yeah, well.
Those are in high demand. They are searching the country for those things.
Yeah, if you can throw down for Icon,
You know, then they're worth $300,000 at that point. But they use architectural glazing in the windows. How cool is that?
But I'm sorry, but Stinger 911 or Icon 4x4.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Because that's the other thing about it. I don't think it. This is.
The 911's double the price, though. But
depends on how you spec it, though. Here's the thing, though. Thinking about Icon builds versus Stinger builds, are people buying Icon 4x4s and actually using them off road? I doubt it. Whereas conversely, if you buy a Stinger, I think there's a chance you're kind of using it as intended. Whereas I think you're buying an Icon 4x4, it's just a really super clean 4x4 that is very capable, but you're not doing any of that with it.
I told you the story of that rich guy who bought one and forgot that he owned it in one of his seven houses. His wife was like, don't you already own one?
Called up Icon to order one, and they went, sorry, sir, you're already on our books? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I guess I do. I parked it in the garage of my seventh house.
Ridiculous. However, I will say, if you have a Stinger and you have the quilted leather engine bay, you're not driving that car either.
I would get over that. I would get over that pretty quickly.
Well, but just don't get the quilted engine bay. It's an engine bay.
Right.
It's an engine. It needs to run. It's going to get dirty. I'm sorry. It's not a showpiece. I'm off on a rant for some reason because that happens to me.
You never do that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're not talking about Icon. We're talking about £10,000 worth of budget here.
Right.
To get a pickup.
Wrenching us back. The definite specs that they are looking for are, first of all, double cab, which seems to be the primary build configuration in the UK and Europe for pickups.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. Manual transmission and petrol, so gasoline engine, because of the diesel restriction with a reasonable miles per gallon, so reasonable MPG. Also, he's never driven one. So, you know, pros and cons to living within a budget. Pros are, you know, of course, you're within the budget. Cons are you driving a pickup truck, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. The European ones are going to avoid this a little bit, but the traditional U.S. pickup truck doesn't ride very well because the rear suspension is designed to have a bunch of stuff in the bed and is stiff, and doesn't have very good damping. And so as a result, you go down the road and they vibrate. They dance, and not in a good way.
Yeah, it's called the solid rear axle.
Now, that's the traditional American pickups. Now, we're slowly going away from that, and they're getting to where they ride kind of like the big SUVs.
Sure.
The Suburbans and that kind of thing. They ride like those, which are much better set up as far as ride is concerned. That's not as much of an issue in the UK, obviously, because a lot of the ones that are built there are built to be your everyday car. But you are dealing with a larger car. Do you have a need for it? Are you ever going to use this pickup? Which I have to ask, is this going to get used as a pickup at all, or is it just have a fun car? Obviously, I'm going to back up, have a fun car, but I'm wondering about that part.
Yeah, exactly. I've been looking around here, Rav, and I think I've found some interesting things to discuss for you. First of all, I'm going Toyota. First of all, like I said, the Hilux pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
Is a worldwide bestseller,
yep.
Reliable as heck, yep. And I found you one in Aberdeenshire. Is that the correct pronunciation?
No, I'm terrible it's not, at but it, I'm not going to attempt to do it, yeah.
But I can pronounce Birmingham. It's Birmingham.
Birmingham. Birmingham.
I can do that one.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing this is close. So an 02 Toyota Hilux double cab, 2.4 VX270. It is a petrol engine,
mm-hmm.
Gasoline engine. It's double cab. It looks great. Looks top condition.
Yeah.
It's an 02, and it was right around 7,000 pounds, I think, somewhere in there.
I found multiple Hilux as well, and that is my almost sniper shot for this.
Really?
I think the Hilux is really the place to shop. I want to talk about some other things, but that's a definite go drive.
Yeah, I've got a few other things here too. Because of your mention of the Ford F-150, mm-hmm. and Dodge Rams.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this website, Rav. It's David Boatwright Partnership. It's boatwright.co.uk. We're not getting a dime from them. That's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is they import and have supplied American cars and pickup trucks in the UK for the last 30 years. And they're FCA authorized. They do Ram trucks. I even see a Cadillac Escalade on their website here.
Escalade.
It's the best.
I know.
They are in Essex, northeast of London.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if you go to them. Now, they're obviously dealing in a lot newer cars.
They're dealing in high-end stuff.
They're pretty high-end. Yeah. But I'm just wondering, after being in business for so long, they've got repeat customers maybe wanting to trade up, trade into the next thing, saying,
yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
This one's coming off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this one's coming in. This guy's going to trade up. And suddenly a Ford F-150 in the UK might be available through this
Possibly.
David Boatwright Partnership.
They may have the contacts. That's an interesting point. They may be able to point you in the right direction.
Other
I hadn't
than,
thought of it that way.
Because, I mean, there's Amaroks, there's Fiats, there's the Nissans, there's
yeah.
Renault trucks, and they're all configured, that double cab, pretty much the same.
Yeah, they're very similar.
I'm leaning towards, as you are, the Toyota Hilux, mm-hmm. because of the reliability, long-term, all that kind of stuff. So that could be an option, but this David Boatwright, if you want a Dodge Ram or just a Ram truck... Interesting. I mean,
that is interesting
huge,
for sure. Yeah,
but you would definitely stand out. I mean,
yeah. Well, that's
you'd stick out of two parking spots probably. But you know, just saying.
Well, but here's my big question to Rav, and it hasn't been discussed. But he brings up Ford F-150, and I dug around a little bit. I found a couple of interesting things. One specifically, I have to call out. But I had this thought: are you cool with left-hand drive?
Right.
Because that's right. The new complication you're adding. If you really chase the big American pickup, you're going to wind up
true.
In something left-hand drive, and that adds all kinds of complications to just getting in and using it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got to really, I think, figure that hurdle out first if you really are okay with it. Because, I mean, you know, like right-hand drive here in the U.S., you just suddenly go, oh, there's another reason why I wish I was on the other side of the car. You just keep finding them. So that's the thing to really, really ponder on this. I mean, yeah, they're out there. I found some Ford Rangers, and that's an interesting option. I actually found a couple Chevy Colorados.
Right, right.
Of course, you know, Paul's got this great idea. Actually, I think that's a good idea. Find people that are buying them and see what old stuff they have. But I stumbled onto this that I can't believe exists in the UK.
All right.
Somebody is selling a used 2004 Ford F-150, Harley-Davidson 100th year anniversary edition.
You're kidding me.
With the big Harley-Davidson logos on the door and on the center console. I mean, I'll be honest, it's America obnoxious. It really is. It's the it's the Harley-Davidson 100th year anniversary edition.
You're kidding
being
me.
Being sold right now in the UK for 11,500 pounds.
So just outside of the budget,
yes,
but that might be worth it.
But I was so close. It was like...
That's
You've
worth.
You've got to be kidding me. And of course, it's left-hand drive. And I'm not claiming that is a good truck to rush out and buy, but I thought you are one of one.
Yeah, true. And, you know, they're selling for a myriad of reasons, but you could... Which is the point.
The reason might be, please get this off my lawn. Who knows? But there was.
I tell you, I saw a 1970 Mustang Mach 1 in Rome when I was there 4 or 5 years ago with California tags on it. And it was a...
You're kidding.
It was a normal sight to me, but then my brain clicked and went... The surroundings, my environment isn't normal. There's
You're used to seeing that, but not here. Wow.
It was parked and going, orange Mach 1 with California. I'm in Rome. What is that doing here?
Nuts.
And they were rocking it. Everybody's just going, it's the coolest thing
ever.
Wow. Anyway, so my my last suggestion here, of course, is it might be way out in the weeds because, well, I know it is. It's not double cab, but it's the El Camino. It's the modern El Camino, the Vauxhall HSV Malou. I mean,
are they over there?
That's my question. I'm still researching and digging into those.
They probably had all over Australia. Probably had some imported, I bet.
That's my question is, if you go back a few years, say 8-10 years, and it doesn't have to be the hot boy, you know, the hot engine right now.
Yeah.
But could the Malou. You go back?
I see it.
Get
I
a Malou.
It. Yeah.
It's the El Camino modern, fastest pickup ever or whatever.
That is funny. I hadn't gone there. That's interesting.
That's the total wild card out in the weeds.
No, that's a good wild card. I'll give you that.
But it doesn't do the things that she might be wanting the pickup for. Ride height, four doors, you know, pickup-y kinds of things. It's just a fast car with, instead of a back seat, you have a pickup bed.
Yeah, and I really think you're going to want to shop something that is modern with independent suspension and is set up, I hate to say it this way, but truly set up more like a car setup than a traditional American truck setup, because I think in the UK, you're just going to be so much happier with that setup.
Yeah, agreed. So this is interesting. I'm wondering if you can really find an F-150. I'm actually kind of leaning towards that direction, if you could find one,
It is the perfect all-American. I bought a pickup,
and everybody goes, you drive an F-150,
but you're left-hand drive. Yeah,
but it's the equivalent of owners, as you said, here driving Skylines around,
driving
and
Skylines.
They're fine.
Absolutely.
And they just get used to it.
Yeah, yeah,
it's a possibility.
Yeah, you tolerate it for sure. Yeah.
But then you know when you go on a road trip to France and Germany, you're fine. Back to normal.
True, I guess. you go on road trips to Europe so your car makes sense again. That's ridiculous,
exactly.
But funny.
Get it on the channel. I go and, pick up a case of wine in France and get back on the channel and drive it home.
Well,
or many cases of wine because you'll have a pickup truck.
Perfect. Exactly. Fill the entire bed.
Just
look, officer, I'm using it as intended. Please
go to Bordeaux and fill the bed and drive back and you're good. Justifies the use of the pickup truck.
I don't know if you remember this, but when Tom did his first Mustang GT piece for us, the German perspective on the Mustang, which is a really fun piece.
Yeah, it's a riot.
In the middle, he's talking about how huge it is and how, you know, it has almost as big as an American pickup. And just happened to catch it going the other way during his shoot at one point. So he used that shot there, which was perfect, is one of those like dark red maroon Ram pickups the other way down the road.
And it was just all American shot
in the middle of, and he happened to be a shot like on the edge of a German little town. You can tell this is not the US and it's Mustang going one way, Dodge Ram pickup going the other way. It's like, what just happened
here?
That's awesome. Very cool.
We've seen Rams on the ring.
They've become the official ring fire truck.
That's so crazy.
Which is
to me.
Really, really weird
it
to see.
It just strips your gears seeing the Ram out there, like, you know, driving around.
Painted black and with some flame graphics, and that's the. And a part of me wants to like interview the guys that drive those for fun because they hoon them too.
Yeah, totally.
So it's this big black Ram being hooned around the ring with the yellow lights blinking. It's a very mind-warping moment.
It is great. Well, you've got some decisions to make here, Rob. Thank you so much for writing in. If you've got your own debate, write to us, as I say always, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or find us on the website. That is just straight up everydaydriver.com. You can reach out to us on the website. You guys have been emailing us so much. And
yeah, it's great stuff.
Huge appreciation for all the great stuff. People are just writing, checking in, saying, hey, I dropped this article. You know, I found this, found that. It's a lot of fun. So thank you.
We are reading it all. So thank you guys for all the engagement that you're doing. If you wouldn't mind, we would really appreciate your ratings and your sharing of the podcast. That is mattering. That is keeping us in the top 10. It's helping other people find the podcast. I read an email just this morning about a guy who's going back and starting from the beginning, listening to the new ones and then starting from the beginning.
It's crazy.
That keeps happening. But it's because people discover the podcast that they want to do that. We love that. It's so cool. So thank you for that. Also, if you're an IMDb user, we'd appreciate your rating on IMDb. A couple of you have done that. Thank you. Ratings and reviews there matter, not just because I am weirdly vain and I would like to see an IMDb rating. It's not that. Honestly, it's because they are owned by Amazon, and as our stuff goes to Amazon, that relates to the algorithm for other people to find the show.
Yeah.
So in the next few weeks, we will let you know for sure that we are on Amazon, on the Prime there. Some stuff will be free. Some stuff will be paid on demand, but it's headed there as well, and that IMDb thing will help.
Guys, we will take a short break and come right back with another debate. See you in a minute.
Let's talk about the National Humane Society for a moment. May seem strange on a car show, but here's the reason. First off, I have a dog that's 11 years old. Her name's Sierra. She came from a shelter. We love her. She's amazing. Mutts rule. I have to tell you, find a mutt, that is the dog you want. Chance, who sometimes sits in on our show and actually is a great shooter for us, he and his wife, they have dogs from shelters. National Humane Society is great because they're taking care of homeless or neglected animals. They give them food. They give them medical care. They get them into nice shelters with vaccinations so that people can adopt dogs, cats. You can get a great animal from one of these shelters.
But you know, they're also raffling off a brand new Porsche Carrera convertible and a brand new Tesla Model S. Every donation is currently being matched, so this will double your contribution and you can make a difference. So go to nationalhumanesociety.org right now. Like I said, you can win a lot of different cars, but most notably a Porsche 911 or a Tesla Model S. Your donation is definitely going to help save animals, and if you use the promo code EverydayDriver, you get 5 extra tickets for free. Go to nationalhumanesociety.org right now. You can save animals and enter to win some very cool cars.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, at PodcastOne.com, and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off the dry cleaning, you pick up some milk. I've got an idea. Let's add save hundreds of dollars in car insurance.
And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance.
Having extra money in your pocket might be the most rewarding thing on your to-do list today.
Guys, we're back with Clem's debate. He's out in Carlsbad, California,
yeah.
And he's got a double-barreled debate here for us.
Two questions at once, yeah.
Yeah, he's realizing that $5,000 is not a lot of money to go purchase something that's fun. That's the first requirement. But he's also saying something that will increase in value for $5,000. We have debated a $5,000 car in the past a few times, and it's always successful and very interesting. But something that will increase in value is a bit of a twist.
Yeah, I think it's a bridge too far.
Do you?
I think it's a bridge too far.
It may be.
I think, look, Clem, I want to get into the story at large here, but when you're shopping at $5,000, I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. I know I wound up with the world's cleanest $5,000 Mini, but you're shopping locally and being surprised what you discover, and that's the truth of my Mini.
Yeah.
I wasn't shopping for Minis. I was shopping for a clean car that I thought I wouldn't care about it getting beat on in the winter, that might hopefully be somewhat fun to drive. And while looking under that $5,000 figure within 100 miles of me, I started finding first-gen Minis. And I went, a Mini?
Yeah.
Who knew? And then it was digging into what Minis are clean. And most of them were being sold as is. And I'd write the owner and I'd get a page back of, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. But it's easy to fix. Like, oh, I'm not doing that. And I found this clean one. So it's kind of a lottery ticket is kind of what you're doing. You're just kind of hoping for the best. And you still might get burned, honestly. So I think shop $5,000. Find the most fun thing. And I want to get into what you're looking for beyond that. But let go. It's going to earn money. And I realize on the other end of the spectrum, $5,000 is not pocket change. I know that. I know that's a real – I mean, that was the total amount of money I had to shop for a Mini was $5,000. I couldn't go above that.
Yeah.
So I get it's still an actual figure. But in terms of cars, you're buying – you're going to be the last owner of what you're buying. That car is probably going to be disposed of when you're done.
Yeah.
So shopping and trying to hope it's going to gain its value, it's not. It's at the bottom of the depreciation curve, and buy it, enjoy it, use it, and you're done.
Yeah, although it is still a point of personal ironic glee that you found the world's best $5,000 car, despite
as much as I preach, don't do that. Presented. I have this crazy Mini, which is nuts.
I still have to laugh at that, but
I hear it. I get it.
It's very rare. It was a total one off. Maybe a two off if somebody else finds that. So Clem, I like your story here. When he turned 16, his parents bought him an 05 WRX STI. He said, just for the record, if you give a 16-year-old an STI, we'll be buying him new tires 10,000 miles later, because, of course, he's learning how to dump the clutch and do power slides, as one does.
Of course.
But he
Well, let's put it another way. You cannot expect a 16-year-old to not try that in whatever car they got.
Pretty much.
If it's a car that can actually do that, it's just smoky tires. That's all it is.
I went off-roading in the Jeep, but yeah, that was my whole thing.
Of course you did.
Found an empty lot in between built houses and bounding through the dirt, and yeah, it was bad.
I did both slalom events that were not intended to be slalom events and off-roading in the Caprice Classic that I had.
Gosh.
Yeah. There was a road near me.
Suspension travel coming up.
Seriously, there was a road near me that was one of those roads that they built expecting an industrial park, and there was no industrial park.
Nice.
So it was just a road with two lanes on either side and the medians, the small medians, like a median big enough for one tree with a break, and then it would break and break. That was my own slalom course. You've never seen body roll until you have chucked a Caprice Classic down a four-lane slalom course with trees in the middle. And also found out that car topped out about 95. Same road, by the way. You know,
boy, is this road useful.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
Just by my house and there's nothing there. Perfect.
Don't those things have solid rear axles?
They're just solid. They're not solid. Not the good way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a safe turned into a car. They just sort of managed to form a car shape.
Because I didn't have the cool like former police setup. It was just a Caprice Classic. Just car.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Clem was recently married to a beautiful and wonderful lady. Congratulations as well. But she doesn't understand his passion for cars. So this is why they've talked about this $5,000 budget over here. And he's got some thoughts that he's thinking about, which are interesting, something that I have not considered, but I'm curious as to why you gravitate towards this direction. They are the Datsun 240 or 280Z, Mercedes 350 or to the 560 SL, probably manual transmission, or the Mercedes C36 AMG, which is interesting. $5,000 can get you a C36 AMG?
Well, I guess if you go with an old beat down one enough, I mean, there's a lot of cars out there for $5,000 that are frightening. You know, there it is, $5,000. Be careful. So anyway, the thing about this is he's hoping with this $5,000 budget to find kind of the ultimate weekend car at that price. He's not looking for a project. I want that noted. This is not a I'm buying a car to build. This is I'm buying a car to drive.
It's got
to
run.
That's a key thing here. And he's hoping, I mean, again, I think the increase in value has got to go out the window, but you want a great driving experience out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think of your list, I see your Datsuns, 240, 280Z, I think those are great. If you can find a clean one that has not been modded some weird direction, those could be really cool, inexpensive, fun. That's classic motoring and a great setup for sure for $5,000. If you can find one of those, I think that is a good one. I have other ideas, but of the ones you list initially, that one strikes me as the most kind of fun for your money, simple, straightforward car.
Interesting. I'm with you on the value thing. It's going to be hard at that price point to have it go up in value. I mean, there is a bottom of the market for every car, but it also depends on the car, and you know, it's got to be pretty decent shape for it to start going back up.
Yeah, yeah. And then it has to have that random everyone wants one demand to really pull it up.
Yeah,
I mean, there is a chance that this $5,000 figure, if you bought one, whatever it is at $5,000 and you keep it really nice, or you might make it a little nicer, you might get out of it for $5,000.
And just break even,
you're
saying?
You might just, I bought it for $5,000, I drove it for 2 years, I sold it. That's possible.
Yeah.
But like you bought it for $5,000 and in 5 years it's now worth 10. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, I'm with you. I've got some suggestions here for you, Clem, along the lines of salvage title. And I brought this up because of your idea, this is the end of the line for the car you're buying at that price point. This is the last. You're the last buyer. I've embraced that mindset.
Sure.
Why not a salvage title that would get you a nicer car?
Because it's the weekend car. Yeah.
It depends on the reason, of course.
Mm-hmm.
If the car has been submerged, I might walk away.
If it somehow has two VIN numbers, I don't know what's going on.
Exactly.
Don't get that one either.
But salvage can happen for many reasons. Just, you know what, the insurance company didn't want to put the money into fixing the front fender because the underpan or the chassis was cracked.
It's a Lotus Elise. I understand, yeah.
It's an Elise. The clamshell was cracked or whatever it is. You know what I mean? But, you know, maybe, like I said, something from an insurance claim, the car's just sitting there, and you're thinking, this is a perfectly good car except for that rear quarter panel that buckled under, you know, the underfloor or something like that. BMW's being prone to this. Small taps from the rear will buckle the floor pan. And gone. Salvage. We're done.
Sure, interesting.
Take your money. Move on. That used to be the case with, you know, the 3 Series and, you know, I'd say mid-2000s and earlier, something like that.
All right. Keep going.
So I'm looking at salvage titles, which maybe you could get into a Toyota 86. If you could get a $5,000 Toyota 86, interesting. Yeah. That could be fun.
Okay.
But what I'm doing here is trying to
missing half the car, but it's cheap.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm trying to tie this in to the second part of your question here, the second part here. How do you make your wife a car wife? Which, it's got to be intertwined here, because if she's going to let you go spend $5,000 and now you've got your thing, how does that involve her?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking road trips. I'm thinking a destination of her choice that you go and use your new $5,000 car.
Okay.
So that led me to things like a Toyota MR2, the MX-5 Miata.
Mm-hmm.
I kept going to an E36 BMW M3 convertible.
Okay.
Maybe $5,000.
Okay.
I wouldn't call that a project car, but they will run, and you might want to do stuff to it to just
They will
kind
run,
of
and then they will ask for stuff. They will do both. Yes.
Upon it. Or just simply an E30 BMW 3 Series convertible.
Yeah.
It just runs. It's fun to drive. One of the best handling cars.
Well,
just or fun.
Just an E30, not a convertible, just an E30.
Well,
just
I thought convertible because it might be more attractive.
To
go on the road trips and involve his wife.
Possibly.
In the effort to turn her into a car wife.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's the grand plan, and I'm sure she's listening. But I'm
she's listening, arms crossed. How much longer is this podcast?
Exactly.
Aren't we allowed to go to dinner yet? Because you've got to be kidding. These guys again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking some sort of special event that is a destination. Palm Springs? You're close enough to Palm Springs.
Yeah, possibly.
Take a weekend, convertible drive, you tool around, you look at landscape, you look at property together, you do stuff. You get out there in your new $5,000 whatever it is.
Possibly.
That's why I went to convertibles, especially this E36 M3. I'll bet you they're cheap enough.
Maybe.
But then you add the salvage title into the mix for various reasons, and we could get there.
Possibly, yeah.
That's where my headspace is at.
You're operating on the fringe, but I like it.
I am. I'm dancing on thin ice right now, but I figure, you know, I'm trying to push my own proclivities, push my own thoughts,
honestly. Sure.
Just, you know, rather than coming back to some of the, you know what, just get a Miata. Miata is great.
That's the thing. I'm going to say you really need to shop Miatas. I'm just going to go ahead and throw it out
on my list.
Because I think it's the entry-level car for everything you're talking about. You can get them cheap enough. They're going to run. It is a simple convertible. I think your wife will enjoy it. I want to go off on a separate thing about the wife question in a minute. But
I kind of figured.
But all of those things are right there at Miata. It's the obvious answer here. It doesn't mean it's the answer, but it is an obvious answer that will work for what we're talking about.
Yeah.
So I think I'm surprised it's not on your list. You may be shaking your head going, I don't want a Miata. I'm telling you right now, go shop MX-5s. You will enjoy driving that car, and I think your wife will enjoy it too. And I don't think it'll eat your lunch on cost. That's
a
thing
definitely.
Here. Buy it, drive it, enjoy it. What I don't want you to do is to buy $5,000 and just wind up with a four-wheeled problem.
Yeah.
That's no fun at all.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, I also thought here you could actually shop maybe 350Zs.
Maybe.
I think that's the bottom of the 350Z market right now. Lots of aftermarket. You could make that car super fast. I don't know that it's a car that your wife is actually going to be like, hey, let's go jump in the 350. She might. I think the convertible is a little more accessible, but the 350 is interesting. You could, of course, do 300Zs. You could do these things, but I'm now getting bigger than the 240 where we started, and I think that's a real touch point. I also thought of, you mentioned the E30, not the M3 version, just an E30.
Just a straight up E30, yeah.
Fun car, pretty reliable cars, absolutely in this price. I mean, come on, some of them that are down there in salvage world wind up in lemons, okay?
Yeah.
So those
that
base
beat
E30s,
on for 24 hours
you can just enjoy them. It's just a fun chassis to drive. You could go nuts. My wild card in this area is the Porsche 944.
Okay.
You could get them. I don't know how well it's going to run. That's my concern for the $5,000 Porsche 944.
A $10,000 944 will run.
Theoretically.
Might not be the yes. best 944 ever. A
There's a guy here locally that I know, Robert, who bought actually one of the cleanest ones I've ever seen. Now, it was not the turbo. He bought it for, I think, $6,000, kind of like my Mini. He bought it from six, mm-hmm. might have been $7,000. Stick shift, late 80s car, stick shift, lots of miles. I think it had like 145,000 miles on it.
Fine.
But just like the Mini I bought, it was bought from a guy who's owned it forever. The thing was meticulously kept up. And he just drives it and enjoys it. It was like $5,000-$6,000.
That's a good buy.
Don't shop turbos. Don't throw the turbo right out.
Yeah.
If you can find a clean one, they're rattling around this cost. You're just going to have to be prepared for when stuff breaks, it's going to be expensive. But that's a possibility. I know I'm in wild card possibly breaking the bank here because of the maintenance budget, but I did want to bring that up. I'm sorry to circle back, but MX-5s are a great option here. I like your MR2 Spider. The problem with the MR2 Spider is it's less usable. If you do want to throw a bunch of bags in it and go somewhere, your bags are in your lap.
True. But, it's just the MX-5, lightweight,
yeah.
all, you know, very totally. Much an alternative.
Yeah, absolutely it is. It's a very good alternative, and it's absolutely right for the price.
Or a flood-damaged Panamera or a submerged Cayman. Maybe.
For sale. Submerged Cayman. Submerged in water, the same color as the paint. Come see it. It's awesome.
No, it's still submerged. That's why it's for sale.
Shows.
We haven't pulled it out yet.
Says at the bottom, never seen snow. Shows well. Anyway, yeah.
Exactly.
But let's talk. Can we talk about...
Never seen a drop of rain either.
Never seen a drop of rain, but it's submerged in the ocean. So shall we try to answer the question about Clem's wife?
I'd like to hear your answer.
Clem, I don't know your wife, so I'm not going to pretend like I do. But I'm just going to speak to it from a personal standpoint. My wife is she's a car girl by proximity, okay?
By being in the same vicinity of you?
Exactly, because I will not shut up, and now neither will my son. So she's just kind of like, oh, we're doing the car thing again. She actually, I will say this. One of the things that turned her interest a little more to cars was actually watching UK Top Gear. Because she found the entertainment value in the show outside of the cars.
Yeah, she will enjoy that, as a matter of fact.
And she knew, I mean, look, this show has been a big part of my life. Paul's one of her good friends as well. Both of our lives are wrapped up in this show for the last decade. She, by default, wants to have a little bit of interest to understand what we're interested about. Mm-hmm. But there is a layer, honestly, in our shows right now. She could watch, pick one of our shows right now. And there will be some moment about 25% in where her eyes just go glassy and she goes, you've just gone too technical and I don't care anymore. And we're not that technical.
I agree. Although there is a point I'd like to make.
Okay.
That your wife, her driver's ed car that she learned to drive stick shift
yes.
in
yes.
was a Porsche 911.
Yes.
Who gets to say that?
Well, here's what happened. My wife grew up in Dallas. And
yeah.
At the time we were growing up, you know, you had a lot of places that did a little private driver's ed thing.
Yeah.
And the driver's ed thing that happened to be, honestly, this is true, down the block from where she lived had like base Mustangs and like three 911s. And those were the cars. And I think they were actually automatic 911s, by the way. But still,
okay.
It's a 911.
Okay. I'm fine with that.
So she specifically thought, I'm going to actually make sure I plan all of my schedule so the nights I'm there are always weeknights so I can have one of the 911s. Because she was a teenage girl and she just thought, I'm learning to drive in a Porsche. The thought was no further than that. But she loves to rub our noses in it because Paul and I, until we did 50 years of 911, had barely driven any 911s. I don't think I'd ever driven one.
Yeah.
She was like, I learned to drive in one. She just loved. She still gets mileage
she
out of that.
She grinds our faces
still
in that.
Still gets mileage out of that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about her enthusiasm. It was just about 16-year-old girl going, I'm learning to drive in a Porsche. So now she owns a Cayenne and I have to keep telling her, be careful. But anyway, so there is that thing about exposing your wife to things in the car world that she might enjoy as well because they're interesting. And I like your road trip idea.
I'm just thinking, you know, the thought process is yeah. something you both can enjoy together. She gets to plan it. Mm-hmm. You've got input, blah.
Where can we go when it involves a car? It's not about the car, but it involves the car.
Right.
My wife and I did, for our 10th anniversary, we did a drive up the Pacific Coast Highway in my 300ZX.
It's a great idea.
And we just enjoyed ourselves.
Yeah.
Took the T-tops off. Didn't take a bunch of stuff. So we had, you know, stuff in the hatch and the T-tops.
Your toothbrushes?
Yeah, a little more than that. But we just enjoyed that drive. It was a spectacular drive. we didn't plan huge like marathon days, like 150 miles a day, which is easy. It's easy. Stop as much as you want.
I was going to say, if there's a place you want to go look, and hey, let's pull off here and look at the view, whatever.
So, and also you have to let her drive. You have to include her in the driving part to see if she enjoys driving the car. All of this, Clem, is backed by one big thing. If she doesn't, that's okay.
Agreed.
Because that can be the hard part. She has stuff she's interested in, whatever it is, that you're like, really? Honestly, that's a thing for you? And hopefully you're smart enough to be like, I'm not going to say that. it's not my thing.
We'll do it
babe,
for you, Clem.
But okay. So anyway, so she may not like it and that's fine. But I think the edges of what her interest is. Again, I put my wife on the track in the Lotus and that was a little bit too much at once. We'll try that again, but I've got to talk her back into that. So
yeah, she was overwhelmed.
She was. So I think try to share things about it that are car related, but not car hardcore, like a trip. And if she likes that, great. And if she doesn't, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay, you've got some decisions to make as well, Clem. Thank you very much for writing to us. We always appreciate it. And I hope that everybody listening, you like listening to this stuff too, because we sure get a kick out of it. And it's fun just to debate people's stories too. It's,
for sure. Yeah, yeah.
It's great fun. We're going to move on to questions here and take a few minutes, like I said, to answer some of these great questions.
Okay, so I very quick one, and then I have a serious one.
Okay.
Justin Hughes wrote in on Twitter, what is the average airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? And my answer to you is African or European. Moving on.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, you knew it was coming. Nico asked a very interesting question on Instagram. What are our thoughts on the Motor Trend YouTube channel essentially being shut down?
This is great.
If you've noticed, maybe you have, go to the channel right now, youtube.com/MotorTrend. They have 5.5 million subscribers. They are the big dog of automotive.
Astounding.
On YouTube.
Yeah.
They are at a level beyond everybody else. Even the vloggers, the car vloggers, they're way beyond all of them, okay? They are moving all of their upcoming stuff that would have gone to YouTube, which essentially would have been the stuff on demand. If you've been paying for Motor Trend on demand, you've got it in advance anyway. And then it's eventually worked its way to YouTube. They're moving all the YouTube stuff off YouTube going forward.
Yeah.
And you're going to be able to have it either on MotorTrend.com or on the app. And if you watch the promo here, included there are a lot of Velocity and Discovery shows because 10, the Enthusiast Network that is the parent company of Motor Trend, merged, got bought, did an agreement with Discovery in the last year or so. This is the result of that. I'm not going to try to get down into the whys and the I thinks and this is how this is going to work because I don't know. But I will say this. When the largest YouTube car channel decides we don't want to do YouTube anymore, that is a massive indictment of the fact that YouTube is not the place to be if you produced content quality.
I'm nodding over here.
We've been saying for a while they are moving more and more toward vlogging. It's being discussed elsewhere. We were just on Matt Farah's podcast that's coming up in a little while. We talked about it on there.
Yeah.
If you're not vlogging on YouTube, there's no other way to make good money. If you want to produce content, looks like television stuff, not like vlogger stuff, YouTube's the wrong place for it now. And I'm sorry, but if the big dog leaves, that just says further that this is what's going on.
Look, Nico, I've been talking about this to Todd, and the best example that I can come up with right now is Napster. You remember the free music, and everybody discovered the Napster, whatever it is, the bit streaming services, and you could just suddenly get all your favorite songs. Everything was free. And
because everything was ripped and stolen. But
exactly.
Yeah.
But suddenly, music had no value. The talent to write and produce and sing and play those songs that you love had no value to you anymore. And I admit, I participated in that like crazy. I still have a bunch of MP3s that are all ripped and...
Knock, knock, knock. Yeah, I hear you.
Exactly. I'm looking at that as an example of nearly immediately after that happened, iTunes came along.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Every song was 99 cents.
Yep.
And it caught on like wildfire. There were a few others that came out. Sony had a lame one. And,
yeah.
There was that Zune from Microsoft. Apple dominated the marketplace. They still do.
Yeah, yeah.
And it brought back value to music for, I can get that song. I can feel comfortable that it was legal download. I'm supporting the artist. Mm-hmm. I can even pay more now for a higher quality version.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm willing to do that. I think people will eventually come around and then realize YouTube is becoming very quickly the, you know what, it doesn't have any value if I don't pay for it. It's like somebody letting you live in their place for free. Well, you're not going to take care of it. You're not going to help out with the dishes or back because it has no value to you.
Interesting.
It's not worth anything to you. But if you're paying for something and then knowing you're supporting that and supporting the people who produce it. And
let's hope so. Yeah.
I mean, it's again, a decision to make. Not everybody wants to do that. Okay. But I think we're in that place with digital media and television.
Okay.
Because now here we are. We're used to free. We've been, you know, so inundated with free, and the internet should be free, but what about the effort and time and money and people getting paid to go produce that
the
content?
The good stuff costs money to produce, and therefore it costs money to see. That's
as does anything
that's always
you
been
buy.
The model. It's always been the model, and clearly, you know, YouTube has disrupted the model for a while, but based on what's happening at YouTube right now, I think it's still proving true.
Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated by this. I mean, it's still going to be a long time ongoing shakeout,
for sure.
Sort out.
There'll be exceptions to the rule off and on, for sure.
I hope it's not just one big, you know, like an iTunes. One company dominates everything, and that's the portal, but it already kind of is going that way.
Netflix. Anyway, yeah.
I mean, Amazon's up there, but
they do a staggering amount of every bit of web traffic on the planet is going to Netflix.
Yeah.
Adam Fox asked an interesting question on Facebook. He said, okay, a car that handles great, in spite of being really heavy, like a car that handles great for being a big car.
Oh, yeah.
Is that better, more rewarding, than a car that handles disappointingly for a light car? I see where you're going. He's asking, does lightweight trump all? And I'm going to speak to this because I like light cars.
Mm-hmm.
And it bothers me when a car weighs 4,000 pounds.
Well, yeah.
But I will say this to you, Adam. Nothing is worse than a car that disappoints. Period. If you drive a car that you're pleasantly surprised, this handles really well for a huge car. And every time you push it, it's just, you know what, this is surprising. That will always be more satisfying than, shouldn't this car be better? And throw out horsepower, whatever it is, a car that has enough personality and enough dynamics to surprise you with what it's capable of. I think that's true of people, too. If something is surprising to you, you will latch onto that as that is worthwhile. If it doesn't meet up to the standard that you kind of expect it to have, it disappoints you, you're not going to continue with that, and cars are the same way.
Excellent. I'm going to leave that there and talk about Drew V's question, asking us to name a car currently in production whose performance variant is as magnificent as the base level of that car is odious. Great word, by the way.
Yes, very good.
Is such a car possible? Yes, it is. Or are the deficiencies of a poor foundation insurmountable? No, they are not.
Where are you going?
This car is out of production, unfortunately, but I can name one in production.
Okay.
The out-of-production car is the Mitsubishi Evo 10. The
Excellent
base Lancer
one.
Is horribly... I don't wish that on anybody.
That's a great one. That's a great
I'll
one.
I'll buy you a Corolla before I'll make you drive a base Mitsubishi Lancer.
Paul Schmucker, I'll buy you a Corolla. That's actually your follow-up album right there. That's perfect. There's the follow-up album. I need to have
Nate,
the songs,
listening?
Please. That's perfect. Go on.
The Evo 10 takes that base car and transforms it into the one of the most affordable, brilliant driving machines ever created. It's astounding
I'm
what that
back
car
your
can
play
do.
There. Of course I am.
The car that's in production, this is not quite as extreme as the Evo 10, but how about the Fiat 500? The base 500 is uninspiring, but the Abarth... interesting, quirky, fun, engaging, and a hoot.
Yeah, well, but I would say that's true of the Fiesta as well.
Very much.
Now
the Fiesta is
still a little bit chuckable. It's not.
It's decent car. The
it's
base
not
car
awful.
Pretty decent.
Yeah.
It's no Lancer.
I like your Lancer. The Lancer's a really, really good one. that car comes a long way through the process for
sure.
Yeah,
it does. I mean, let's replace body panels. Let's throw all the good parts on it. Except the seats at the very last, but
it's like
you
drop that in the studio and went, make this good, and somebody went, really? That can I have something else, please? Can I start with anything
exactly.
else?
Exactly. Why do I have to start with that cake batter? Aye. All right. What else on here?
As always, so many good ones. Let's see. Oh man, that BMW one is complex. I may come back to that.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. Okay. How would you go about learning stick? B Burles on Instagram. Big guy wants to learn to drive stick, feels like he's missing out. I'm going to say Turo. But I'm going to say, see if you can find on Turo. Like MX-5 Miatas, you tend to be able to find those in stick shift. that would be accessible. See if you can find that in stick shift. I've seen occasionally Golfs or GTIs in stick shift, occasionally. But I've definitely seen consistently when we've gone places where we've looked up Turo just for the fun of it. Yes, it's on my list of random things to look up. I found MX-5s in manual. I will say this, though. You need to rent it, and you need to rent it with a friend who knows how to drive stick. And the two of you do this together. Do not pick up a manual transmission car from the owner and lurch your way down the drive. That's terrible. Don't do that to the person. Have your friend take you to a parking lot and just learn. That's what I would say is Turo one. I hate to do that to somebody's clutch, but at the same time, if you get a light car that's easy to drive stick, you won't do that much damage if you're not out there trying to hoon it. I don't know of another way to do this if you don't know anybody that has a manual transmission car, because you're not going to get one from a dealer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a hard situation. You know, it really is. And you got to find somebody that has one.
I'm going to try to get through three questions as quick as I can.
Okay.
There's a question from David P. on Twitter about tips for heel and towing.
Okay.
I will say start in higher gears and go from sixth to fifth because
I see that.
Revs are going to be a lot lower. You're not going from third way down into second and really have to blip the throttle hard.
I see that, yeah.
Go start way high in the gears and feel what that is like and then work your way towards the third to second up to a hard corner.
You know, I'm going to piggyback on that. That's a great idea because you know what's really easy is if you're going highway speeds in sixth, see if you can blip the throttle just well enough. And don't even try to do this fast, by the way. Even try to do this. Do this over the course of 5 seconds.
Right.
See if you can push the clutch in, get the RPMs up perfectly for fifth that when you slot fifth and you let the clutch out, the car didn't lurch at all.
Mm-hmm.
Do it like in 1, 2, 3 kind of steps. Don't try to blip it fast at all. That's a great one. That's the motion in really slow-mo.
Yeah, very much so. That way you're not going, oh, am I going to over-rev and, you know, blast it all the way up to 8,000.
Yeah.
Don't need to do that. Start
that's
at the,
an interesting
in the high gears.
I hadn't thought of it that way. I see what you're doing.
Okay, next question about what else? Brandomness asking on Instagram, any basic maintenance items on your cars that we refuse to tackle ourselves, despite them being relatively simple, and that is any task that requires a special tool, and that special tool can include a lift. We would love to have access to a lift, but
wouldn't
for low
nice?
Cars,
yeah.
I don't want to jack the back end of the Cayman way high in the air because all the oil is not going to drain out properly.
Sure, I see that.
So it's an easy task to do, but I don't have the right tool for the job. You don't want to take the front clam off your Lotus and dive deep down into, you know, Radiatorville or whatever's down there.
Yeah.
If there's special tools involved, it's not that the work is too hard. It's just special tools.
Well, and there's also a standpoint of thinking about if I can do this and it's going to take 12 hours and I can pay someone to do it and it's going to take 6 hours, do I have 12 hours to spare?
Mm-hmm.
That's a real big question for me these days with the show and with a wife and with a son.
Yeah.
Where is my time best served?
Right.
Do I want to pay somebody to do something I could do myself? Not necessarily, but I am in a weird way buying my time back. That's always a big consideration on my end of just going, you know what? And then when it gets to stuff that's on the fringe, it's like, maybe I could do it. I've learned enough to pay somebody because now if it's done wrong, they have to fix it. If I do it wrong and then take it to them, I'm paying twice.
Right.
Which is
exactly
terrible.
With your time and your money. Okay, last super quick question. SG Photo 2 is asking, how do you decide what tire pressure you want to run with aftermarket tires? Well, they're all pretty much aftermarket because, you know, Ford doesn't make Ford tires.
This is true.
But
this
I get your
true.
Point
yes.
because they're OEM tires recommended for the car. I get
yeah.
your point.
Yeah, yeah.
I watch mine, yes, on the instrument panel, but he's asking, what am I looking for when I do? I'm looking for big discrepancies. I'm looking for, okay, the tires should be heating up. They're all generally in the same range. Whoa, that right rear, that's way off.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I agree.
Massive discrepancies in scale. Of course, read your recommended tire manufacturer, the guidelines for what the car you're running, and then look in forums too, because people will recommend, hey, in warmer temperatures, here's what I found is great. Try that for a while. See if you like it. You know, what are the steering inputs like? Do you like a softer ride? Do you like the harder, rock-hard, you know, tires?
Well, and you can even go into a situation where if you go onto forums and look at where guys track the car you have, there will invariably be a thread about tire pressures, what tire pressures they run to run track. And some guys like the car to be more tail-happy. Sometimes some guys don't. And here's how I run my tires.
But right.
If you really want to get into the weeds, you can go there quick because somebody has already played with this and you can find what you like. Can I do two and try to do them quick?
Do it. Let's do it.
These are big ones, but I want to try to do them quick. Photo Stu asked the question about, forget for a second tuning out of class, can you buy cars out of class, meaning you aren't ready for that car yet?
Oh.
Yet. Yes, Stu, you can. You said, you know, you've come out of front wheel drive, low horsepower. Should you buy a 350, GT350 or Z06? You could. I don't think you should. I think there should be a mid-grade car that gets you into that driveline, even if it's a brief thing. If you've never driven rear-wheel drive and you jump to a Z06, I will help pull you away from the tree, okay? Because it's but this is a problem. Now, luckily, you know, modern traction control is there to help you in a lot of cases, but that is a lot of car for anyone, let alone I've never done this before. That's why you see guys, they get a bunch of money, they're .com sold, they get a bunch of money, they buy a Lamborghini, and guess what? The next day they wrecked it. This is not a surprising progression. Okay, you got out of a Camry, you bought an Aventador, you wrecked the Aventador. Of course you did. Okay?
Exactly.
So I feel like if it's not a car, it can be life experience. Can you go to some track days and drive some rear-wheel drive stuff and understand
that's
the dynamics?
Good.
Some sort of middle ground step is necessary, I feel like. Maybe it's not a car, but don't make just the leap and be like, I got this, because you don't. Okay? So there's that.
That's very good.
Scimitar Star asked this question about BMWs, and I'm not going to get too far into it, but I want to try to touch on it. He said, when we start talking BMWs, we lose him. We go E30, E46, E36. What are we talking about? Do you know Porsche? I'm going to talk to Porsche for a second. Because
excellent.
Porsche has, if you watch our 50 years of 911, they're all the 911, as far as we know. All the generations are called
right.
the 911, but it's actually only the first model variation that was called the 911. And then they have internal designations. If you want to get into the weeds, it's the model designation number for that chassis. The Mini I have is a 2005 Mini Cooper. It's also internal designation the R53. Am I going to go around and call it the R53? I am not. will guys that are really into Minis want to talk to me about the R50? Sure they will.
Just wait till we get to engine codes.
Exactly.
From Nissan.
Here's the thing. Do you need to know that? You don't need to know that. No, it's a 3 Series. When we talk E30, we're talking about ones from the 80s. We talk E36, we're talking ones from the 90s. E46 is ones from the 2000s. Those numbers don't relate to each other. From like an outside perspective, it's like, what are those numbers?
Right.
But if you drill down, that was the BMW development code of that model. Mm-hmm. So that they knew internally. Because if BMW said, we're making the new 3 Series, everybody'd be like, which one is this? Oh, you're talking about the E30. Internal designation codes. Do you need to know these? You do not. Okay? You do not. We're mentioning them because it gives you an ability to find, honestly, Wikipedia cross-references these.
Yep.
You
yep.
can look up and you can find, oh, that they mean that generation. Don't feel like you need to know this. It's not necessary. It's same with what's a 964 versus a 993. That's two different generations of the 911. I've lost a huge group of you by doing that. Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
is it necessary you know that? It isn't. Welcome
right.
to 911s. It's much easier for us than try to speak in a range of years, but that's what's going on. We're talking about internal designation number versus the model, and the model is what they sell it as.
Agreed. A bit of historical reference for you, and that is BMW Mercedes used to follow pretty closely, pretty strictly the, you know, the 328 used to mean, okay, that's the 3 Series, that's the size of the car, this is the marketplace where it is at. And the engine displacement was a 2.8 liter engine.
Yeah, it used to be. That was really cool when it happened.
That's completely out the window. Mercedes has done terrible things
yeah.
by having, you know,
the 6.3 liter badge, but it's a 6.2 liter.
Exactly.
Why did you get a 2? Could you not find 2s? Were they out of 2s?
Yeah, did the supplier not? Anyway. So that is the historical reference where that all started. They don't adhere to that as much anymore, but the 3, the 4, the 5 series, those still indicate the class of car that the market is at. It competes against, say, the Audi A5, the 5 series, or you know what I mean? Even though it's technically
yeah.
the A6
yeah.
competes against the 5 series. I'm not going to try. Anyway.
Now I want to hurt myself. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But just a little historical reference, the class of car plus the size of the engine. That kind of made sense.
That would have made sense.
I wish
that was
we stuck with that.
A Bob Lutz creation, actually. Yeah, he was very involved
yeah.
in going, guys, let's figure this out. And that's great. Now numbers mean nothing. They mean nothing.
So hopefully we haven't confused you further. And guys, thank you so much for writing to us. We really appreciate it. And looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.